Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 3 regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is heard on 2 stations in Ohio and Virginia, as well as Brunswick, Georgia, St. Augustine, and Jacksonville, Florida. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities, and we sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donation button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention Radio.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're delighted to have you on board with us today as we face the issues. Let me remind you once again, we are having a lively conversation, dialogue, and discussion with Michael Boylan. Michael is the commissioner, the councilman, I'm trying to call it commissioner, councilman for District 6 and the city council here in Jacksonville. You can join in the dialogue and discussion, asking him questions or giving input to this conversation today. The telephone number is 831-0917, 831-0917. Michael, again, thank you for joining us. And for some of those that are listening today that may have never met you, let me say, ladies and gentlemen, I've had the privilege of knowing Michael now for his entire term, this first term in city council. I'm thankful for what we have seen. I don't mean that in a slighting fashion for others, but I'm thankful for what he's done in the leadership in our city. And may I remind you, God has given us civil government. You can look at Romans, the 13th chapter, and I outline it very, very simply. God has given us civil government, the civil government servants, the servants of God. God is expecting them to serve him, and through that, serving we, the people. And civil government is designed to prosecute evil and to protect good. And we're finding the opposite of that today because we fail to vet the candidates. And in failing to vet the candidates, we get what we vote for. And I believe that's a pretty powerful statement, but I believe it's correct. Michael, thank you again for being with us. Jacksonville is now facing what I would call an alarming increase, uptick of what I would call crime in our city. What should be done about it? What do we need to do? Do we need more JSO officers? What is the root cause, and what is the answer?
Sure. Well, first of all, let's speak to the enforcement piece of this, and that's a great frustration for a lot of us in the context of, I mean, if you take a look at all national standards, we are underserved in terms of the number of police versus the ratio of population. Mm-hmm. And then when you overlay on top of that the massive area of Duval slash Jacksonville,
840 square miles,
it's very difficult for them to effectively enforce the laws as they stand and pursue. Even here in Mandarin, we've got issues, and it's difficult at times for me to be able to get the kind of time and attention it deserves from the JSO in this process. So that's number one. So we need to continue to support the JSO and understand and recognize that we have a responsibility, first and foremost, to protect the safety of our citizens, mm-hmm. and as we as a council have done that. As a matter of fact, I've already received the endorsement of the Fraternal Order of Police and the Firefighters Associations for my candidacy because they know I now have a record of supporting the work that they do, the good work that they do.
Yes.
Beyond that, I think there are root causes that we have to address, and that leads into a conversation that, if I may, about the work I've been doing recently.
Yes, do that.
Scripture says, Jesus says, the poor will always be with us.
Yes.
And we are, and we as a community, a lot of our focus, and rightfully so, is on developing this community and advancing the work of the businesses community, attracting people into our community, growing Jacksonville, which has, in and of itself, is an issue.
Yes.
In many respects, growth issues. But beyond that, we also have to take a look at the underserved and those in our community. Back in August, I approached Council President Freeman about the prospect. You know, time and time again, we had people coming up to us at city council meetings during the public comment portion, pleading for our assistance, housing, homelessness, access to health care, particularly. And so what I proposed to Council President Freeman was to put together a special committee to focus on those three, what I called critical quality of life issues.
Yes.
If we don't deal with the seed for these people finding themselves in a sense of hopelessness, that they resort to crime, then, you know, whatever we can do to defer that or detract from that, you know, process for them, we need to do. And you talked, I love what you said earlier on about this is a role and responsibility of the people. It took a unique process in putting a plan and putting together the process for this special committee work. We took each of those issues, access to health care, homelessness, and affordable housing, and I asked one of my colleagues to co-chair each of those working groups, and I paired them with a subject matter expert. We hosted roughly 19 meetings between September and the end of November. There were over 700 participants from the public sector, the private sector, the nonprofit sector who took part in those conversations. So it wasn't a bunch of council members sitting around saying what's best for our community. It's about telling us what you think. And at the end of the day, we were able to generate a series of recommendations that many of which will probably be moved forward by the council. I made a full presentation to the full council, pardon me, on December the 13th. And my goal was to finish this work in advance so as we get into the election season, colleagues that are running for mayor and others who are running for the mayor's office or for city council had this 48-page report that we put together for them to understand the issues. And there were three questions we wanted to answer. What's the scope of the issue? What's being done in the public, private, nonprofit sector right now? And what are some of the best practices happening around the country that we can adopt? And we had presentations from cities like Atlanta, Philadelphia, Minnesota, Miami, and others talked about what they are doing to address these issues. And hopefully we'll see some good work coming out of that in the very near future. But I think you can't discount the fact that we've got to focus on these issues because they're not going to go away.
Absolutely. Let me ask you a pertinent question that comes to my mind in dealing with these issues, and you succinctly, appropriately touched on the three major areas. What do you find the illegal immigrants' impact having on Jacksonville? Is that a problem in Jacksonville?
Yeah, interesting you mentioned that. You know, Lutheran Social Services is the primary agent to support immigration services in our community. And I sat down with Bill Brim, the executive director of that group, the other day and invited him to come and speak to the Mandarin Rotary Club in a couple of weeks. So we'll get a better handle on that. I think, you know, if we see immigrants come to us through that process, and their whole focus is to assimilate those people into our communities, and that's really the process we need to do. I have not seen a lot of experience or heard a lot about others who are coming to this community otherwise. They may be out there, but it has not been brought to my attention as an issue for our community. So I can't speak much more than that. But other than to say, if they're not following what is the standard protocol for that kind of, you know, absorption within our community, then we certainly need to find a way to address it.
One of the major things, and of course this is a whole nother conversation from a national level, that we have open borders.
Yes.
And with the open borders we've had, there's a conflict in numbers, somewhere between 5 and 6 million people in the past 2.5 years that's come into America undocumented, not legal. And yet we find, and this is just me personally, we find they come in illegally, then we make available for them cell telephones, funding, and then it's left up to the local communities to find housing for them and social services, medicine, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which puts major burden on the taxpayers
Correct.
That's funding this to be done.
Correct.
And so I have a real conflict with that. I believe from the standpoint of humanitarian help that is wise to help once they're here, but at the same time, it's a taxpayer-funded thing that is a burden on our system. What is your view of that?
Well, it parallels exactly the issue we have with homelessness in our community,
mm-hmm.
okay? You know, the goal is to make them productive citizens, contributing productive
yes.
citizens. across the board. And so whatever we can do to expedite the process to make that happen, I think we need to do that. Whether it means, if it means slowing down the immigration process, doing what we can to control the border crossings that's happening in our communities, you know, I think we've seen some effort to do that, perhaps more less successful than more so in that process. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't continue to try and make that happen. It's way above my pay grade.
Yes.
As all this goes. All I would be concerned about is the impact it's going to have on our community. And
yes,
that's why I'm interested in knowing more about what Lutheran Social Services and others are doing to assimilate those folks into our communities and make them productive citizens.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you that telephone number is 831-0917, 904-831-0917. We're talking with Michael Borland. He is the present city councilman for District 6 and Jacksonville City Council, running for re-election primary on March the 21st of this year. Michael, you touched on it and a moment ago with JSO. We've just elected T.K. Waters,
yes,
which I believe is going to make a good sheriff for us. Had a lot of admiration and respect for Mike Williams for years and years and years and getting to know him. And I believe T.K. is going to do a good job for our city as sheriff. What are some of the things that we need to do through city council that will enable T.K. Waters to do what he needs to do? How do we get the funding for the major difference and the need for JSO officers? Here's the point. I just discovered recently that you can dial 630-0500, which is JSO general phone number, and it can ring about 100 times, and there's no answer. And I traced that down and discovered it's because they have automated the system and do not have people that they can hire to be the live people to handle that. So I stopped with the calling, the 630-0500, after about 100 rings, hung up, and it rung back about 25, 30 times. So I called a connection with the JSO. They contacted the area out here for us for me to make a contact because of something that was happening on the campus. I was told that everything is automated. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? How do we change the trajectory of that?
Well, let me start with the TK comment first and TK Waters comment first. I presently serve as the chair of the Rules Committee. So the first way we can and have actually helped TK Waters is, you might appreciate, any new sheriff comes into town, if you will, there was a complete makeover of his senior management team.
Mm-hmm.
It's my responsibility as the rules chairs to pass forward for nomination, or the recommendation, the nomination of those senior management members of JSO. So I had a chance to literally to meet with each and every one of those new folks. And they're not new necessarily to me or to us, because many of them held opposite leadership positions throughout the JSO in their time there. I was remarkably impressed by the wisdom that he demonstrated, and I don't know T.K. Waters very well, by who he put in the right seats, the right persons in the right seats on that bus, if you will.
Right.
For example, Zone 3 Chief Randy Glossman, she was a long time patrolling the Mandarin Southside area, so now she is the Zone Chief. She knows the neighborhoods, and that's mm-hmm. really important to make sure we have the right people on the bus.
Right.
I think one of the things that I've tried to do the past year plus, I mean, you folks come up and say, oh, you're giving $100 million to the JSO. Yeah, what about these needs? We've not been able to correctly communicate what the city has done, and I did that actually purposefully in, as part of the critical quality of life report, was to have the city to amass the funds that we've done to support the nonprofit sectors. It doesn't quite rival the $520 million, but it certainly rivals the argument that we're not, that we are forgoing those important critical seed needs, if you will, for the sake of JSO. So we haven't done that. So I think as long as we continue to demonstrate that we are serving many masters as it relates to supporting the initiatives of our community, we have a greater opportunity to support JSO in its particular needs. Perfect example to your point. This past Saturday night, as you might know, a number of our neighborhoods here in the Mandarin area, they were coming around with those anti-Semitic bags of stuff, calling for hate and that sort
yes.
of thing. And I reached out to Zone Chief Glossman, and I know a number of my neighbors called 630-0500 and experienced the same thing you did.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't serve us well. It
no.
doesn't put a good thought in the minds of people saying, if they don't even answer the phone, How do I know they're protecting me?
Yes.
Or in the position to protect me? So we've got to continue to make sure you and I are in the communication business, or I have been for 20 years, and you have been in, as long. We understand the importance of back and forth in the dialogue. So someone needs to be there to answer that phone.
Absolutely.
Automation doesn't work. More times than not, whether it's Public Works Department or 630 City or whatever it is, call my office and let me see if I can find a way to get there. My voice is just a little bit louder than yours.
That's right. Do a little intercept for it.
Absolutely.
Michael, I believe we have Derby on the line. Derby, go ahead with the question or comment, please.
Yes. My concern is the criminal issue. Everybody running for office, city council, mayor says, we need more police. And I say, no, the answer is not more police. The answer is the right judges to issue severe enough sentences so that these criminals, once they're arrested and put in jail, they will not think twice about committing a crime again. If there's little punishment, they'll be criminals again as soon as they get out. And we need to punish the criminal severely enough and also have them make them accountable for restitution to the victims. And that is not happening because the judges are all liberal judges.
Well, you make an excellent point. You know, many times we see on the ballot a list of judges on there. And quite honestly, to your point, Dr. Youngblood, earlier on, if people don't take the time to understand what the values of these particular candidates are who are running to sit on the bench.
Vet the candidate.
You've got to vet the candidates, and you've got to challenge them. And even if they are in your camp, you need to help reaffirm them and make it easier for them to stand by their principles.
Yes.
And say, you know what, you've done something here that warrants this kind of punishment, you're going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would encourage you and others to pay attention to the judicial candidates.
Absolutely. Any other questions or comments, Derby?
Well, the same thing would apply to the illegal alien issue. If you cross the border illegally, that is a crime, and then there's no punishment. You only get benefits. So they should be punished, sent back right away, and any illegal alien who commits a crime should be put in a forced labor concentration camp and pay the victims. But that never happens. We only worry about the illegals. We don't worry about the American citizens who are the victims of the illegal aliens.
Well, I know here in Florida, and again, this is kind of above my pay grade in terms of responsibility and focus, but you know, I am pleased to see that we are making a concerted effort to see what's coming up from the South and out of the Caribbean into our neck of the woods, in South Florida particularly, that we are seeing a lot of those people going right back to where they came from, however unfortunate their situation may be. It tears at the heart. It really, you know, you've got your head and your heart in these conversations. Mm-hmm. You feel so badly for these folks and the trials and tribulations they've gone through to get to where they are. But the fact of the matter is, and I think we're starting to see some of this, a clearer enunciation on the part of the administration that we just can't let this continue to be a soft issue. We've got to deal with it directly.
Derby, thank you so much for your call, for your input, dialogue, and discussion today. Thank you so much for that. Mike, thank you so much for calling. Michael, changing the direction just a bit, mm-hmm. but still on the same subject. We have right now in the Mandarin area, and it's all over Jacksonville, but we're finding it exponentially increasing. Those on the street corners, especially on weekends, Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays, bobbing in and out of traffic, holding up signs, wanting money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, tapping on windows, insisting you let the window down so they can talk with you, et cetera. How do we control that? Are there regulations on the books, ordinances on the books that need to be enforced with that? Before you answer the question, I'm told that we already have ordinances on the books that will control that, but they've been told to stand down and not to control it. What are your thoughts? What are your insights?
Well, there's been, we're talking about judges early on, there have been a number of cases right here in the state of Florida in the recent years where someone standing in a public right-of-way, holding a sign, soliciting funds, and their communities have attempted to prohibit that. And courts have deemed that to be a violation of their First Amendment rights.
Mm.
So there has been some efforts to navigate that process. And I think we've got one that's working its way through the council right now. It's a pedestrian safety bill. And what the bill does, it in effect makes it a finable offense between not only the person who is soliciting funds, but those who are giving them funds. So that interaction between the peddler and the person in the vehicle both can be fined for that interaction, because it is, in fact, a safety issue.
Absolutely.
It was introduced by Councilman Carrico 2 months ago. It got deferred. I think we're going to be taking it up again here in February, because it is an issue throughout the Mandarin area. Not only in the context of that, it's also creating blight. If you stand on some of these interstate corners, and I'm constantly working with FDOT to make sure they get cleaned up, they bring their trash and leave it there, and mm-hmm. it's making our city look pretty nasty besides that. But I am very concerned. And unfortunately, now you're seeing families involved in this process. Yeah. They have their children with them. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're so busy doing what they do, I fear for the safety of the children as part of that process. So I think you can expect to see something coming down the line here very soon. That, and JSO, by the way, at the point in time, and I understand now that even Sheriff Waters is going to be supporting the idea of saying how we do this. Now, the challenge, of course, is going to be the enforceability of it.
Yes.
Arguably, what it's going to be, if you're standing there and at an intersection or standing on the median, for example, and you do it one time, and an officer happens to see you, he will pull over and watch. And if you do that through a sequence of three lights, that now becomes an offense, and that's how it's going to get played out. So we'll see how it goes. More times than not, if you're right, it's been my experience when I hear from constituents about it, they share it with me. When I see JSO shrugs their shoulders, well, I can't do anything about it. We are attempting to change that with this pedestrian safety bill.
Looking forward to it. A very serious question that's major in my book. Let me build a foundation before I ask the question. In the book of Joshua, when the children of Israel crossed into the promised land, mm-hmm. God told Joshua to get 12 men, take 12 stones, and put there at that point for the purpose that in future generations, when a child would ask the question, what is that monument for? They could go back and then reiterate history of what took place at that juncture. We have historical legacy monuments across America. Our city is blessed with a number of them. What is your position, and how can we continue to stand and say no on the removal of our monuments? What is your position on that? How can we stop the destruction of history?
Well, I think all of us are growing tired of that conversation and time again. I'd rather see us focus on what we can do to help people as opposed to what we can do about pieces saving monuments. But that being said, I'm on record as supporting the maintenance of the existing the Women of the Confederacy statue that's out there now in Springfield Park. I see it really as a teaching tool. Mm-hmm. I see it as an opportunity for folks to talk about when it was constructed, what was the environment at the time that it was constructed, that we learn from it.
History lesson.
We, you know, don't put a bushel basket on top of the lamp. You don't hide the story. It is, if in fact for many it's a wart in our history, mm-hmm. then so be it. Let it be that.
Absolutely.
Let's have the conversation around it. So, I think both of the commissions that were put together to look at this made the clear context is the best way to handle this. And the great fear I had, and quite honestly, I will tell you this, the other day at a city council meeting, someone made it pretty clear they weren't going to stop with that statue. I fully expect there's going to be a call at some point in time to change the name of the city.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because on the fast track.
And this just further softens the road to make that happen. And I just said, at some point, we just have to stand up as a community and say, it's terrible. It represented a time that we're all not particularly proud of or not proud of in terms of how we treated our fellow brothers and sisters. But at the same time, let's not lose the opportunity to use it as a teaching tool.
Losing the focus, absolutely. This is a very, very broad brush question, Michael, but I think it fits the narrative of where we are. not that you have anything to do with the governor's office, but the governor has just taken some very strong stands about the AP programs in our colleges, and I think he's done a marvelous job with that. Made national news on Fox News early morning how that the AP now has decided we're going to change the curriculum to meet what the governor's demands are. What are your thoughts on that? What is your position?
Better the governor take this on than me. I can tell you that for sure. I try and stay in my lane, you know, and I wish, and I think we talked about it briefly beforehand. I think the best way we as a community to say, how do we stand behind the intent of the governor and the work he's trying to do, and how do we level the playing field when it talks about teaching our history, is to put into place people who make those decisions on the school boards and the university systems to say, we share the principles and the ideas that the governor is espousing. So.
Yes, you saying that made me think, and of course, because of having been there in a capacity with the CIE, the governor has just appointed Senator Manny Diaz to head up the educational program in the state of Florida. And I think he's going in with a fresh broom to clean up some things that's been left with ragged edges, as I call it. Michael, we've got about a minute and a half on the broadcast. Tell our listeners, I'm familiar with it, but they're not. How does your faith play into the decisions you make in the leadership role in the city council?
I appreciate that. Well, you kind of leapfrogged that my comments early on. My faith plays a big part in my life. I am an active member of my church. I understand that prayer is important, the importance of prayer, even to that end. And this is not common knowledge, but there are a half a dozen of us council members who get together before each meeting in a circle and pray.
Amen.
Just to pay for the patience we need to have to get through the next 4 or 5 hours, for the wisdom, but most importantly, to remind ourselves that we are servants of God in this process and servants of the people too, number two in that process. So I think that prayer is always important, because we all fall down and we all get up and we all let anger or other things get in the way. We just understand that whatever trials and tribulations we face as council members pales in comparison to what the Lord has gone through for all of us and the love of all of us.
Amen.
And so we try and empathize. I try, and I know that many of my colleagues do, look to understand and appreciate that we have a unique responsibility as servants of God in the roles that we play.
Well, I want you to know, and I want our listeners to understand, the need to pray for you. To pray for our other city council members, to pray for the leadership in our city, asking God to give you wisdom each and every day to make choices and decisions as to what needs to be done for our city. Michael, again, thank you so much. Take 1 minute, a couple of seconds.
Okay.
Share with our listeners how they can reach you.
Again, voteboylan.com is my campaign website. If there's services you need from the city, it's mboylan@coj.net. For those of you who live in the Mandarin area or anywhere in Jacksonville, every 2 weeks I put out a simple email that does a 2-page summary of the city council meeting of that week and other items of interest that I think may be of value to my constituents.
Very good. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Let's Face the Issues today. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
1.7 and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with them. A reminder, CTU is now enrolling students for next semester. Ask about first semester scholarships. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE.